she come out of
high school?
High school. Yeah. She was with Westray for a while. But we had a little gig group at Carney Post. And we played Fridays and Saturdays nights. Andy had the band. Mm-hmm. See, I'd been working night turns. So he was having trouble getting his band organized. And when I got on daylight, they had a boy from Homestead that played drums. And he was giving his notice because he was going to go to Buffalo or somewhere. So I said, well, Andy, we was on the road together, and I'm on daylight now. I can make them weekends. And I remember Dakota come in and did a number with us and sang out of key. This is back in 1952, 53.
Because I made my first gig was with her.
She, by going to New York, she had a brother named Fred that used to play tenor around here. But see, Fred got his start as a waiter at Creary's and places like that. Mm-hmm. So when he went to New York, he didn't play no, he got in the waiting business. And I found out later he had something to do with Smalls up there. But by her brother being there and knowing the ropes,
It helped her.
It helped her, yeah. And I see she's got a recent record with some good accompaniment, and she's sounding better.
A little bit, but she's still...
She ain't true.
I mean...
My favorite is Sandy Dow. But you know what? She's not getting the right being handled right.
And I don't know who she's connected with or whatever. I don't know whether she does her own or what. But, you know... there's another thing I want to ask you too. There's something else in here. What was it?
Well, you put a lot of work into this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, something else I wanted to ask you about. I can get it. Let me get it. Oops. Okay. Yeah. Something else. Because, like I sit at home and all these things, and I said, I got to get in touch with Curtis. I got to get back to Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of cleared up a lot of this. See, when I used to get on, like going in to play ice shows and things, mm-hmm. and this, the stage, the lower entrance to the arena,
mm-hmm.
and I would often think, somewhere in this area is where, you know, where our old musicians club was. So then last night, on my way home, I was taking Lydia home, and I stopped right up here on Crawford, and I looked down, and this splits the arena. Raleigh Avenue splits the arena. I said, well, it's got to be somewhere in this area, because I just drew this on. This is just a rough idea. But this brings back a whole lot of memories.
I grew up and walked in the street in all these places. And I knew what was going on. But you see, now, there won't be no conflict. Any information that you want, I'll give to you. Because when I had to change my format, I'm just going to mention the people that I know and the things that I experienced.
Well, okay. I mean, talking about these clubs and places that you played in your book, would it be a conflict for me putting it in our story?
No way. That's why I'm giving you this. Yeah. But I feel that other people have ulterior motives.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and just like I told you, because of Eddie Anderson and the guys that I talked with you, I didn't meet you until then,
but
I'd heard a lot about you. So you are like me, you're honest, and anything that I can contribute to help you,
I appreciate that.
I'm glad to do it. But see, I had mixed emotions from the time that I walked in and saw that white woman sitting down at the thing, and then she come in, and this is why I didn't show you the letter she sent me.
I intended
to bring that to show you the letter that the Historical Society.
Oh, one other thing, that's what I wanted to ask you. In that stuff that you let me have, there was a 471, a union thing on the jurisdictions that were under 471. Would you mind if I borrowed that and made a copy of that. You know,
what, that thing that I showed you?
Yeah.
Where they showed the bands that were on and who was ineligible to play?
Well, that, plus the fact it said the jurisdiction that they came under 471 was heavy, because we weren't allowed to play downtown.
No, no, you couldn't go below. It was a place that was going to open up down the lower part near Court Place called the Steakhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And that caused a lot of guys to join the union. That was before 33. That's why Andy and them joined. He was playing banjo there. And they felt... I'm going to have some more coffee. Okay. But I was hoping you would have some lunch. I have good special.
No, I'm not hungry.
Wait a minute, I got to go. I'm familiar with all of that because the guy who used to deal poker, Harry Smothers and his wife Margaret Smothers, they lived next door to us on the first floor on Arthur Street.
Oh, okay.
And I used to see him all the time, and he'd have that visor and look like he didn't come home until 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning because he's down there dealing poker. I remember, and that was the leader house thing.
Mm-hmm.
See, Gus didn't come into being down there until about 30 or 31.
Okay, when was the baseball team? Was it around that period of time?
Yeah, when the Crawfords got together, yeah. See, I know the people. I know, see, Deanie Harris sold a lot of his pictures and a lot of information to white people that has been printed and in book form.
And he's not getting anything for it.
No, he's not. Right, I know the history of him. See, he wasn't good as long as Woogie, but when Woogie faded out in the 30s, around 36, 37, started losing out, and the white Jews and Italians were taking over the numbers, then Teeny didn't have nothing to mean on. I'm going to get some more coffee.
Yeah.
And listen, you'll get
okay.
Yeah, and I remember I was in Stoney's band. See, Teeny, back in 27, when I first come back here, he was playing a little basketball with a team called the Paramounts. And a lot of them guys on the Paramount played on the old Crawford baseball team that originated down Washington Park. But around about 30 or 31, Woogie got lucky and got the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And Teeny didn't need that anymore. He, but around 37, and what happened, Johnny Taylor, the photographer for the Courier, married a girl I went to school with, Dorothy Brown, and he quit it. I don't know where he went. And
that left an, opening
for Teeny to get the job. Because nobody else wanted it, and he took it. And from there, and all of those pictures...
No. That's why they're here, because see, some of these parts are cockeyed. The thing does not match up.
Yeah.
So when the coffee comes out, it rolls down, and I don't want it to roll
on you. Or
I'm used to the burning.
Did you know Whitey Turner?
Sure, I knew Whitey Turner.
Yeah, because he used to go with my mother too for a while.
Whitey, I knew his brother Boots
played drums.
He tried. Well, I remember tried Boots. I was ahead of them guys in school.
Yeah.
I got a letter. Boots is dead, you know. He's been dead for 3 or 4 years.
Whitey's been dead too.
See, Boots went up to New York. A lot of the Pittsburghers. He went there late, but some boys went up around
as
New York.
As a musician?
Yeah. No, no. He was a player.
Oh, okay.
He was a bit up there, and then he become a Muslim. I got a letter. Remind me, I'll show it to you. Where he, after he visited me in Pittsburgh, it was in the early 80s. I had just retired. And he came up the house and visited me and talked. And when he got back, he sent me that letter. And I always learned to file things, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
But Whitey was a good
basketball player, too.
And a baseball player.
Because he played, I remember, and I this had to be the late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to be the late 30s because I was maybe 10, let's say 27. Yeah, I was about 10, 11 years old.
Yeah.
when because he used to take me, there was a gym, I don't even know where it was, but he put me on his shoulders and I threw the basketball through the hoop. I remember that.
And you know, upstairs over the Crawford Grill, I mean upstairs over the 50 Temple, they had a basketball court. And we used to play the dances after the basketball. Mm-hmm. They'd run a basketball game. Well,
is that where you're going on Wiley?
No, you're going off of Center Avenue. Center. And on the first floor was a big floor. They had a skating rink in there later years before they lost the building. And upstairs was the auditorium with a balcony and a big dance floor.
Where is this again now? The Pythian?
Pythian Temple.
Okay, well, which later became the Granada Theater?
Yeah, Granada Theater, yeah.
Okay. Because I noticed up on Lally in the back, there is, you know...
You know who used to have offices in there? The American Woodman and everything. In dealing with the history of Pittsburgh, I had these people on these talk shows happening. Everything that we were first in, we lost. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But they want to blame white people.
I know. No,
see what happened to Pythian Temple. Now you can acknowledge this. They built the Pythian Temple. Nice to Pythian, all black. Now right next door was the building Rose. Right next door to the Pythian Temple was Rose.
You mean
on Center Avenue? But here's what happened. Before the temple got complete, Rose had opened up.
Rosie's the bar.
Next door. All right, he had opened up to compete with the Sandwich Inn that was on the same side street right up at the corner near Aaron Street. But he couldn't pull that Jewish clientele. But by the blacks having a lot of activities in there, he opened the doors and left. See, you couldn't sit down in the Sandwich Inn or the steakhouse down between Arthur and Protector Place on the right and Mycel's Music Store. See, I knew all that. So what he did, he became a millionaire selling them hot dogs and corned beef to the Negroes to overflow them, and then automatically that became their hangout. Just like here.
Yeah, because my mother used to work for him. For
Harry Rosen. That's how I knew because Wimpy and her were good friends.
Right. And then later that became Lipman's, that place next to the Granada.
Yeah.
You know, it became Lipman's because we had a group, jazz group here, Art Lance and Doc Miller, Horace Parlin, Spider, Lindsay on bass, and me.
Well, what did Art Lance play? Wasn't he
tenor. They played saxophone.
And he became the business agent for a little while, and then he disappeared.
Yeah. Well, he's up in up near Zirinoco now. That's where he lives. But he's in medical healthcare.
Oh yeah, and he went on in.
And he got into that because he worked out here at Whiteman Center in Square
Hill. Oh yeah, but then he was a medical nurse, a male nurse.
No, but he got into administration. He became a director. Yeah, he got a good job out of it. But we played in there. In the late 50s, 58, somewhere around the period of time, we played in Lipman's when McCoy Tyner and Elvin Jones and them came. I think they were playing at Ellis. They were in town.
Did they play at Ellis,
I think
too?
They played at
Ellis. Yeah, he had some. You remember this guy that plays two horns? He's got a funny name. He's blind.
Roland Kirk.
I remember seeing Rashawn. Roland Kirk there, Rashawn.
Yeah,
and I tell you who was J.C. Moses.
Right.
Left
right.
here with him.
With him. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
J.C.
Moses.
Yeah, drummer. I don't think any of them could have touched J.C. See, originally he was the dancer. He's one of the Moses that I'm telling you about.
I didn't know he was a dancer.
Huh?
I didn't know he was a dancer.
Oh, yeah, J.C., the whole family.
All of them.
It was Rudy. And Lemon.
I met his father because he used to live on Morgan Street.
Before his death. Worked for Herb for years.
Yeah, I knew his dad.
And he still followed jazz because I remember Eddie had me to come out to the Homewood Library.
Yeah.
And when I go, who's sitting up there but old man Lemon Moore?
Yeah.
He was in Vaudeville and played the Star Theater because, see, he had them in the Candy Kids. And this is how I got to meet him. Man, I tell you this, whatever you want to know, I will tell you. But you go ahead with your program. But see, because I can tell a story that nobody can dispute, and I can back it up with facts.
That's the whole thing. That's what I want.
But you see what I'm telling you, like I told Ralph Proctor. Yeah. See, I appeared on the show several Mondays ago with a guy named John Ford.
Okay.
He comes on right after.
Was that the radio talk show that you were talking about?
Yeah. I appeared on it, and he wanted me to appear downtown at the Federal Building with him. Mm-hmm. He had an African art exhibit, and he wanted me to come down there and talk about jazz. And I told him, no, I wouldn't be ready. But he's going to do one at Coffee. And I think it's around the 28th. I got his phone number, and I said I would prefer to do that one with him. And I know what I'm going to say. I'm still not going to give out too much info, but I can talk to an audience in the way they know, because I see some people in the streets, and that I heard you on John Ford's show. He's a college educator. He says the one thing I like about it, you could tell it was authentic, what you were saying. And I also said, I'm not for sale. I'm just here to supply you with, like I told Pat Mitchell. She runs out and gets Frank Bolden, you know, come up with something.
Take it. When I was trying to get this, I went to the library.
Yeah.
And I asked them about this Pittsburgh book. Yeah. And that was the first name out of that woman's mouth. And she said, well, have you talked to Pat? Because there is some history. And I said, no. Because she talked about the TV thing. I said, no. Because some of that information is not.
Misinformation.
Yeah, I said
that. And he has set himself up in every way when everything pertaining to black politics. He sent himself as the historian of all of them.
Spokesperson.
Now, John and me called him a couple of years ago, and he didn't know who he was talking to, so we got to talking about different bands. See, and then I know a whole lot of athletes and people because that's my background. And I was talking to him, never let it, he wouldn't know me if he saw me right now. But some of the things that he was telling me about Earl Garner, Tony Gloucester's band, and I knew then, when he come down here around 1930 or 31 to go to Pitt, he played clarinet.
Bolden did.
Yeah.
Where's he from?
Little Washington. He played in the Pitt band, and he was like a black kid. And that was when. So anyhow, Rich and him told me, he said, yeah, Kurt, we know Frank Bolden. This is way back then. He said, well, he can't play. We give him a trial, and he couldn't cut the mustard. He was strictly on that planet. He didn't have no alto or nothing like that. But he's a good bullshitter. And you got a clique here, white and black. Now, those are the in crowd. When anything comes up about football, see Frank Bolden.
Yeah, right.
And man, he is so far off base, but let's drop him.
Yeah.
What I'm saying to you, you go home and think over anything in here. I can call name, rank, serial number, and I'll give you the information. And we'll probably meet again so that I can show you some of this information.
You know, I got oh, shit. I left it at home. I got a letter from the Federation.
Oh, hey, this
here
is
it is here. Here it is here. Remember, okay, let's go backwards. What's the date? July 6th. Yeah, this one.
Yeah.
And then Rideau's back.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think I showed you that letter when I was here before. That's a letter that Phil, the president of our local, sent to the Federation about the charter.
Yeah.
And then later he followed up with a fax.
Yeah, I see.
Okay. And we still haven't gotten any response. See, this is September.
Mm-hmm.
So then, and then I'm calling.
Okay, sir, thanks.
I got that. Yeah, see, exactly. I remember when Claire Meador was the president of Local 60, and he was the first local to become an international president.
Right.
And then after him came Hal Davis.
Okay, when you were in, like, in 36, that's when Fritz Hawkins was president.
No, Fritz had died. Fritz died around about 1931 or 32. Well,
was Hence Jackson the president at that time?
No. See, when Fritz Hawkins died, things went haywire. And it wasn't until around about 1933 or 34, 35, when we tried to reorganize and organize our territory and set prices on it. That's when Fred Gould took over.
Fred Gould.
And from being a chartered member, I remember him telling Elmer Green, because Elmer Green was the Secretary of Treasury. Okay. This is before Melinda.
Okay.
He said, God damn it, I don't care what you do. You're going home and get them books, and I'm going to sit here and wait on it. So Elmer Green come in and give up the books. Then Melinda's took them.
Okay.
But we didn't have no office or nothing. It was at his house, and he worked in the post office. Now, if you wanted to go out of town, you had to wait till he come home from work to get your transfer and travel papers.
Well, see, Gambrell was saying, you know, I guess in about 1915, 1916, when the Union probably was in one of those disarray periods, and his father helped to kind of pull it on base, because he's trying to say that his father brought the Union to Pittsburgh, it didn't happen, because
I'm going to tell you, said right. Bill Gambrell is one of those type of guys. If he sees an opportunity to capitalize on something, because if you don't go to him with this, he'd never mention what his father was, because I gigged with him back in 47. He had never mentioned nothing about, and I don't think he became a Union member until around about 46 or 47.
Gambrell.
Yeah. He wasn't one of them old boys
right,
back then.
Okay.
See, we tried to reorganize in 35. That's when I became a member. And I was with the Sophisticates of Rhythm Band.
Right.
But Andy and Bass, through the Steakhouse coming up in Buffalo, Andy was playing bass. They had to join the Union hoping that they would get this gig. Bass had to join the Union when Honey Boy got a gig in Buffalo.
Okay.
I forget who the piano player
was. Bass was young then, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Bass was
16, 17?
About more like 16.
Okay.
See, I'm a couple of years. I'll be 80 in April.
Okay.
And I'm about 3 or 4 years older than Bass.
Yeah.
And I remember when we went and got Bass for the Candy Kids in 1931. And his father bought him a cello, and they used to call him Chelly. But what happened, everybody was looking for a bass player.
Mm-hmm.
So they inveigled him to trade that cello on and get a bass. And when they did that, he left us because Earl Littlejohn was before him, and Franklin, they had all kinds of them. See, I know how the bass players come along. That Carl Pruitt come in after all this.
Yeah.
And then come Ray Brown, Bobby Boswell. And there was a boy that used to well with me down there. He played with Walt for a while, and then he left here. He could play pretty good bass. I can't call it dark boy. He quit Walt. Oh, you should remember him. Bass knows his name. And I knew him, and I was shocked when I saw him playing the bass. And he could finger it like this boy, Dwayne Dalton.
Yeah.
By playing bass guitar, they learned to coordinate the left and the right finger. See, like I used to tell Andy, see, we knew Leon Teen Pettiford, and they had a brother that played alto sax with a band out west named, I forget his name, Richard, I think. He played alto with Ernie Fields' band.
Right.
This is back in 45.
Yeah.
And the guys was tuning. So I told Andy, I said, you see how he plucked that band? Mm-hmm. I'll bet you he played banjo or something before.
Right.
Because, see, you've got to have a feel for the keyboard.
Right.
And if you played banjo, you used to coordinate in your hand
and fingers.
And you take a guy that put Carl Pruitt quit Woody Herman because Woody wanted him to also play Fender bass. And Carl graduated from Columbia University. See, he went in the Army. He was in New York, but Cooley Williams got drafted. When he come out of the Army under the GI Bill, he went to Columbia, and because he was a brain in there. Finished school, and I think he majored in music.
See, Edgar said that he wasn't going to play Fender. But initially he said he wasn't going to play the fingers.
Yeah, Carl. And see, Carl worked with Sauter, Finnegan, and all of them bands and traveled around. But he had an attitude. He was the bruiser. See, because when he joined Spoonie Williams' band, they had clean head and all them guys. And they thought they was going to ruffle. Carl offered them. But see, he was physical. Hell of a breaststroke swimmer. Shinley and Harry, you know. And he fooled with medicine balls and all. Just like that. Yeah. Because when he was coming along, I was playing with his brother, Les. And I used to encourage him. And the first gig I ever got to work with him was out at the Nut House with Alice Brooks, and he was on bass.
Who's the Nut House?
That was in Millville. The Merkers had that.
Oh, okay.
Lou and Al Merker.
Yeah.
Then after they faded, the Littmans come in.
Mm. Okay.
And that's when Brown got his break. See, the gig come open, Littman called local and said they wanted a black band to open the Hollywood Show Bar. Prez told him, we ain't got nobody right now, but you wait. And I got the right man. Brown was in the Army, and we knew he was going to get early. He held that job until Brown got out of the Army. And the first mistake Brown did, they didn't want no drums. He got bass, Spalding, and a boy named Calvin King, who played guitar and bass. And his uniform was Tails. Well, Tails had become monkey by that time. Wasn't nobody wearing no tails. And he saved that job. And I'll tell you another thing that come up. It was in the 50s. It was people like Billy Lewis and myself that had studied with some of the best teachers. They had this thing out at the, what did they call it?
City Light Opera.
Out at the stadium.
Yep.
I'm in the music seat because I was working afternoon for the school board. I'm in the musician stuff talking to Prez one day, and he said, Kurt, you know, people from the so-and-so called me, and they want 5 or 6 musicians out there to participate in the thing. And I didn't think nothing of it, so me and Stoney used to be tight, but I found out he wasn't right. So one day I see Stoney, I say, hey, Stoney, Prez was telling me, this is before Stoney, because I said, Prez was telling me that there's an opening for 5 or 6 black musicians out at that. Stoney was playing in Joe Westray's band. Next thing I know, the whole band, Joe Westray's band, went out. See, Stoney had went in and told Joe about, and Joe was the kind of guy, they pressured Prez. Anything that Joe or Leroy Brown said was law with Prez. Because Prez was illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever they said, he went along with it. But I knew it was wrong.
Yeah.
Because because this is when on the committee with Joe Harris.
Bobby Bonzo.
Huh?
Bobby Bonzo.
No. Bill Branson.
Oh, okay.
Joe Harris, Bill Branson, Duke Spalding, and a guy from Northside that played trombone, but he played in the march named
Elmer Wilson.
Wilson.
Right.
And myself.
Yeah, okay.
We went around and made recommendations, and they laughed at me. See, what it was, when they were filing for application, you know you have a 6-month waiting. Browns are down there running an aft tire joint with Booney in them. Colonel Fairley was the safety director. We had an in with him through Dave Roberts, big politician. And when they got busted, the regular union musicians had to get that money together to pay the fine.
For the social club.
Yeah, for the social. That's why they were filing applications. And they were, all right, after we had to pay that, because I'm playing in the WPA band and the marching, and Prez be right there for the dude. When they finally got the license, they wanted to operate the same way, freezing out any of the charter members from knowing what was going along. All of a sudden, here comes Pernell Gibson out of a clear blue sky. He becomes the treasurer for the club, stealing right and left. Billy Lewis was on the House Committee. I tried to hit him. I said, look, Billy, when he takes them registers on, since you're a house commissioner, you be with it and go with it. Something happened, turned out, took the money, I went on upstairs, you know. And so I know the school. And see, Ruby wasn't under the pig. This is why Ruby knew when I was fighting and telling them that they was doing wrong. Well, Ruby didn't know. She was just a good girl. She wasn't a part. But she didn't know what she was into. That's why I resent when she trying to know something about it and she wasn't even a part of it.
But it's interesting because, I mean, we should have had this kind of information a long time ago. You know what I'm saying?
If they had listened to me, all of this, I would have been in book form. But this is why I didn't get no kick. I was on the outside. It kept me out of it. I was a little too hip because I come from D.C. years before, and I knew what the picture was too. So, like this, you won't be able to get another copy of that, will you?
Yeah.
You get me a copy of that.
I got a copy for you. I'll bring you a copy.
Yeah, and what I'll do when we meet again, you bring your chart, and I'll give you the history, who the owners and managers of them joints was. Yeah. This is personal, but because you're a nice guy, I see that you have it.
Thank you.
I want you to get some credit for it. I don't want to see you doing all this legwork. Yeah. See, I had part of the history.
Mm-hmm.
The part that I didn't have is what you went out and got by yourself without it, and I think you should...